Austin, Texas is booming, and as its neighborhoods change, many black residents are being pushed out.
I was a part of the community. It doesn't really exist anymore as it did, and that's pretty sad for me.
I'm Ari Shapiro. Why Austin's black residents are leaving and where they're going, plus the latest on Trump and Russia, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Tonight on 360 North, watch the BBC World News at 7 and Alaska Weather at 7:30. At 8 o'clock, Alaska's Statehood Pioneers, in their own words, continues its conversation with former Governor Jay Hammond. Aviators is next at 9, and at 9:30, Oregon Field Guide puts together smurfs, sonar, and rockfish to evaluate marine protection schemes. Tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
Stay tuned for a Juno afternoon. We'll learn about the bowling fundraiser called Street Versus the Beat to raise money for the Glory Hole. We'll hear from Katie Bosler from Bartlett Regional Hospital about infection prevention. We'll learn about an update from Southeast Alaska Land Trust, and we'll hear from Ukulele Russ. Taking a look at the weather today, areas of fog, and tonight, tomorrow, and Friday, expect widespread rain showers with highs near 60. Stay tuned for a Juno afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Canada's national investigation into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls has suffered a new setback. One of the commissioners has resigned. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, over the past few months, the process has been plagued with delays and resignations.
Since February, there have been a string of high-level resignations from the commission. They include the director of operations, the director of communications, and the manager of community relations. Now, Marilyn Poitras has become the first commissioner to step down. In a letter to the prime minister, Poitras explained her decision. She said it is clear that she was unable to perform her duties as a commissioner with the process designed in its current structure. The chief commissioner, Marion Buller, assured the public the work is moving ahead despite Poitras' resignation. And the Minister of Indigenous Affairs, Carolyn Bennett, says she remains confident that the commission has the ability to get the job done.
They really do have the vision, the values, the tools, and the plan to get this work done. There is no question that we all agree that the communication has been an issue, and that they have got to do a better job communicating their plan and their vision, values, and the way that they're going to get this work done.
But it's clear there is growing criticism of the commission, and not just from families of victims who say they've been kept out of the loop. The latest departure is raising more questions. Sheila North Wilson is the Grand Chief of several First Nations in northern Manitoba. She says Chief Commissioner Marion Buller now needs to resign to restore faith among the families and survivors. And the Ontario Native Women's Network says it will no longer support the inquiry in its current form. The National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Perry Bellegarde, has invited the commissioners to attend an upcoming General Assembly to speak directly about their efforts. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The Secaucan Chippewa community is in the process of documenting stories from elders as part of cultural preservation efforts. The Secaucan Band is receiving a gift of recording equipment by the State Bar of Wisconsin, which will assist with the archiving. Ken Krall with WXPR has more.
The Tribal Historic Preservation Program was recently notified of the gift. Tribal Historic Preservation Officer Adam Van Zyl says they were donated two cameras and related equipment after the state bar bought new equipment, but some rarely used equipment was available, and Van Zyl says that equipment was donated to the tribe.
My department has been starting oral interviews in our community with elders so that future generations will be able to watch those interviews and see their elders and learn their stories and learn about their history and their culture.
Van Zyl says the donated equipment is a distinct upgrade from what the tribe was using. He says the cameras are available for anyone in the community to come and be trained to record the elders' stories.
Anyone in the community is welcome to come into my office and rent this video equipment, and then we will actually go through and train them on how to conduct oral interviews, take them step by step through the whole process and actually go out into the field with them to help them interview the elders and then archive those videos.
Van Zyl says storytelling is part of the Secaucus Chippewa community and the donation will help future generations. For National Native News in Northern Wisconsin, Ken Kroll reporting.
Leaders from tribes in the U.S. and Canada are preparing for a Northern Tribal Border Summit. The summit will explore challenges of tribal border crossing and other border-related issues, including government policies and tribal IDs. Tribes plan to form a Northern Tribal Border Alliance. The Kootenai Tribe of Idaho and the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe announced the summit this week. It will be held in Minnesota next month. Federal representatives and members of Congress are expected to attend. Tribal leaders want to exercise sovereignty on border-related issues and ensure their concerns are included in policymaking in the U.S. and Canada. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And welcome to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling, this afternoon's volunteer host, and at the board is Jeff Brown, who produces our program. My first guest today is Rebecca Service, and she is organizing an interesting and unique fundraiser that is set for Friday night.
Saturday.
Thanks, Rebecca. At the Taku Lanes, and it is a bowling. Is it really a competition, Rebecca? Let's talk about it.
It's not really a competition because a lot of the participants on the Glory Hole side really haven't had a lot of time to practice. But it's more of like a fun thing for kind of causing to meet and crosstalk between the police, like meeting over the aisle. So we can bond and, you know, humanize each other and get to know each other.
So let's provide some background to our listeners. The event is called Street Versus the Beat, and it is billed as Homeless Folks Versus JPD. And the fundraising that is achieved by that will go to the Glory Hole. You yourself are homeless, Rebecca. Will you talk about that situation, how you became homeless, and what your living situation is right now, and then we'll get into how you hatched this idea and brought it to fruition.
Okay. About 2013, I was actually working two full-time jobs. I worked for a circus. I was also an art dealer. I also was an event promoter, plus I was a performer in general. I was like one of those people, when they woke up, every minute of my day was planned until I went to sleep. And then I was attacked sexually by someone who I identified as a very good friend of mine, and afterwards I started having really bad panic attacks, and I had a suicide attempt where it caused me to start having seizures afterwards, and I couldn't be a part of the circus anymore. I couldn't do my art dealing anymore. I went from making a couple, sometimes thousands of dollars a week to I couldn't even leave my house. And it was kind of like that for a while. I came to Juneau, actually, 2013 for a summer to be with my sister, who was here for the season. And that was, like, just calming and just got away from all the stress and the pressure and was able just to relax. And then I had to go back because I had a storage unit. and then I had a friend who gave me CBDs. In marijuana, there's CBDs and THC, mm-hmm. and the CBDs actually took my seizures from 5 to 10 seizures a day to maybe I have like once a month, and I was able to start functioning as a person again. And then I went to California so that I could have legally obtain my medication so that I could be a functioning part of society again.
But you were not able to gain a permanent home after that then?
Well, San Francisco, the housing situation is for a small apartment, about $2,000 a month. But they have really great services and outreach, so I was able to start my own business. I was able to buy a van, which I modified and insulated, put a floor in, built a bed, and I was able to live actually very comfortably, and I was a very a part of the community of San Francisco, and there were a couple of apartments that were possibly coming up, but San Francisco wasn't quite the right fit for me, like Juneau, I think, is.
And what's your living situation now? You don't live at the Glory Hole, although you're organizing a fundraiser to support the Glory Hole. So talk a little bit about your situation here.
I don't sleep well around other people, and their housing situation is a dormitory situation. I would not be able to sleep with somebody having access to me while I'm asleep. And so I just feel safer in my van. And though I am looking at getting apartments here, it's actually the first time in almost 4 years that I've looked at possibly getting a home, because I feel stable enough here with the resources that Juneau has that I can actually go the next step of actually trying to make something stable, because I don't think it's just going to fall apart again between Jammy, the Glory Hole, the Polaris House. There's just a lot of great outreach out here that it's not just we're going to give you food and we're going to keep you alive, but fishing poles. Like, you want to help yourself, we're going to help you. And that's the kind of resources I need, because I like to work and I like to support myself, but I just need a little bit more help. I just need a hand up from where I am.
So it was your idea to organize this Street versus the Beat bowling competition, which, again, is Saturday night at 7 at Taku Lanes. What was the genesis of this idea? And you've organized the whole thing, so talk about it from beginning to what's going to happen on Saturday.
Well, the very beginning, in San Francisco, I was in Haight-Ashbury at the very front of Golden Gate Park, and I sell hat pins, and that's what I do for a living, is I sell hat pins, and I would sell them at the front of the park. The police had pretty much, technically it was illegal because I didn't have a business license, but the police gave me a thumbs up because I was very polite and kept my space clean, no drinking allowed around me, no smoking allowed around me, and I kept a very positive energy about me. But at the front of the park, some police that were undercover came up to into the park, and everyone announced these people were here because we knew them. And someone tried to hide something, and the police thought they were trying to hide drugs, so they like went and they grabbed him and they threw him down and they opened his hand and he had a cigarette, because it's illegal to smoke cigarettes in the park. And but they're all wearing bowling shirts, and they're all gray, and the undercover police officers are known as the Gray Ghost. So I asked them, like, hey, are you guys on a bowling team? And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, you're wearing bowling shirts, and they're gray. And they didn't think it was very funny. I thought it was hilarious. But then another police officer about 2 hours later came into the park in uniform, and I asked him, like, hey, do you bowl? And he's like, I bowl a 220. What do you bowl? I'm like, oh, I'm terrible at bowling, but, like, would you bowl me? If I set up a bowling game, would you bowl me? And he said, if you make it happen, I'll be there. And then I was telling my sister about this idea, and my sister's like, that's a great idea. You should make it into a charity event. I think that would do really well. And then also I heard a radio broadcast about how most Republican and Democrat things in the 60s were resolved on the golf course. Because when you're actually in the seat in front of everyone on a camera, you can't look like you're leaning the other way. But whenever they golf together, they're able to talk about things and resolve things on the golf course that they couldn't resolve in whenever they're actually in session. And I thought that that's what we need to do, that we need to back off and have somewhere to where we can meet and just, like, have a common, enjoyable activity where we can, like, talk. And, you know, it's like, oh, that's not just some random bum. That's Larry. Larry actually has schizophrenia, and Larry's, like, this is a person, not just a problem. And also a police officer, I've had, of course, some situations that weren't the best, but the police, my van was stolen in San Francisco, and the police were the ones who got it back. I've had seizures where the police were the ones who responded and helped me. And I think a lot of people in San Francisco, it's very polarized, homeless versus the police, right? And here I saw a great opportunity because the police here are so much personable, and they're so, you can get to know them, and they aren't these big scary people that want to throw people in jail. They're more concerned about everyone being safe and trying to solve an issue that honestly isn't just Juneau, but is all over the United States. But Juneau has the unique ability that it's a small enough town that I think that it can be resolved, and that we can meet in the middle, where in San Francisco it's so inundated. Here, people can actually, like, it won't take very much to come to resolutions. You know, I feel like, honestly, we might be a couple laws away, a couple more, like, discussions to resolving issues that the other country are crippled by.
How many folks will be participating? How many officers and how many what we're going to call, I guess, street people, because it's called street versus the beat, or folks, let's say, who are currently living on the street or currently homeless. So how many on either side, and how's that going to be set up?
There's going to be six on each side, six police officers and six participants from the glory hole, and they're going to be on one lane each because that's the way the screens are set up in the taku lanes. They will do We're trying to get this done in 2 hours, and so one person will bowl, but then so the police will go, say, and then we will have the other person waiting to go to the response to their movement, so that we can go with the flow, but also have a long time, so it's like an enjoyable thing to watch, but also not something that is over too quickly.
And is the public invited to come and watch? And I understand there's a silent auction as well.
Oh, yes. The public's allowed to come in. We're going to have a table at the very front where people can donate. They can put money on the police, or they can put money towards the homeless people, or they can just donate to outright if they don't want to feel like they're betting. But all the money and all the proceeds are going to be going to the glory hole. And then once they come, we're going to be having a huge silent auction. The response from the community has just been bringing tears to my eyes. Like, I've never been, you know, like, people just instantly, of course I'll help, you know. And, you know, when I mentioned the homeless shelter, like, it's a present thing that people know about. And some people who haven't donated, it's because they donate so much so often, and they volunteer, and they already are donating, and they don't, you know, they aren't donating more because they honestly are already participating and helping the homeless, and everyone's aware and active in the situation.
Now, how was it decided which Glory Hole patrons would be the bowlers? I mean, did you have tryouts at Taku Lane, or did you just ask for volunteers, or how are those six participants selected then?
Well, one of the things that I came up against is I honestly was very new in town. I've only been in town for about 2 months, 2 months yesterday. And I didn't know a lot of people. And honestly, at first people were like, who's this person who's trying to like come up here and be a big shot? But now people have relaxed a little bit from that. There's just certain people who really responded, who really were touched by somebody coming up and trying to do something to help.
And it will be primarily men who are bowling, or men and women on both sides?
Men and women. We actually have some auxiliary players because the thing with being homeless is for every one step someone has to do, we might have to do 5 to 10 steps. And so some people just don't have transportation. Some people honestly are having psychological problems. And so we've actually had quite a few members actually have to be switched out because they ran into unstable situations where they couldn't really be a player. So it's really the people who showed up. We've been practicing now for about a month and a half every Sunday because they have dollar bowling. Sometimes I was always there, but sometimes it was me and one other person, and sometimes it was me and seven other people. And so then it went down to the auxiliary players are the people who, you know, at the practices had the lowest scores, but they still showed up. And then the people who are the higher bowlers got moved up.
It's about fun anyway.
It's all about fun.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Rebecca Service. She is an individual experiencing homelessness, and she is organizing at her own on her own idea, an event Saturday night at Taku Lanes called Street Versus the Beat. And it will feature folks who are patrons of the Glory Hole, as well as officers in the Juneau Police Department bowling against each other. And the public has the opportunity to put their money on the team that they think may score the highest, and there will be items that will be offered as part of a silent auction. Rebecca, what would you say is the greatest misunderstanding of homelessness by those who are not experiencing it?
That it's a choice. A lot of people see, when you look at me, if you saw me on the streets, you would not think I was homeless. And a lot of times you might see people who look healthy, but you don't realize what's beneath that's going on. And that most homeless people statistically are veterans, orphans, and mentally disabled people. And unfortunately, a lot of diseases are mental handicaps are not apparent unless you're actually having a fit. And then maybe if you're, I had a seizure once and someone literally stepped over me and said, that's why you don't do drugs. And it's just a misunderstanding that people are lazy and that they can't help themselves. A lot of times it's a long time building up to being homeless. Also, I met someone who had built boats for 40 years, and then the boat company went out of business, and no one wanted to buy someone who built boats, but they had no other working skills but building boats. And especially with the recession that happened in 2008, a lot of people lost their houses, a lot of people lost their jobs, and it's a lot of especially older people who aren't able just to pick things up and reinvent themselves, and it may have been psychologically devastating to the point where they really weren't able to build up from that. And then a lot of times whenever these people go to doctors, when they can go to doctors, the doctors prescribe them medications that can possibly cause some drug issues. They tried to put me on some severe sedatives, and I absolutely declined. I take Ativan whenever I'm having a panic attack, but if I start taking the stronger medications, you know, it's just a downward spiral. But a lot of people don't have a lot of options, and they really want the medications to solve their issues.
Well, thank you for joining us today. Do you have a goal of how much you hope to raise for the Glory Hole?
I'm hoping to raise like $2,000-$3,000. I did a fundraiser before for a circus, and we made about $3,000.
Excellent. We're talking with Rebecca Service about the Street versus the Beat. That's the bowling competition on Saturday evening, 7 o'clock at Taku Lanes. Drop by, place your bet, and put a bid on a silent auction item. Thanks for coming by today, Rebecca, and sharing your experience with us.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 12th of July, 2017. It was on this day in 1389 King Richard II appointed Geoffrey Chaucer to the position of chief clerk of the King's Works in Westminster, which came with a good salary, £30 per year, but a very heavy workload. Chaucer had to supervise the building, the maintenance of a number of royal projects, including the Tower of London and Westminster Palace. But it gave him the chance to travel widely and to meet people of many different social classes, and probably was a help in enabling him to write his great work, The Canterbury Tales. It's the birthday of the poet Pablo Neruda, born in Parral, Chile in 1904. He was born Neftali Ricardo Reyes Paso Alto, but because his father did not approve of his writing poetry, he published his first book, Crepuscolario, under the pen name Pablo Neruda. It's the birthday of Henry David Thoreau, born Concord, Massachusetts, 1817, went to Harvard, didn't like it very much, went to work as a schoolteacher, did not like that. He went to work in his father's pencil factory, came up with a better way to bind graphite and clay, and then he found his calling in 1844 when his friend Ralph Waldo Emerson bought land on the shore of Walden Pond, and Thoreau decided to build a cabin there. It was only 2 miles from the village. He had plenty of visitors, lived there only 2 years, but he got a good book out of it, Walden, Life in the Woods, came out in 1854, in which Thoreau wrote, "I learned this, at least by my experiment, that if one advances confidently in the direction of his dreams and endeavors to live the life which he has imagined, he will meet with a success unexpected in common hours." And it's the birthday of Julius Caesar, born in Rome around 100 BC, a great military leader who captured for the Roman Empire most of what became France and Great Britain. And he wrote about his triumphs on the battlefield, and his writing turned him into a national hero. He came back to Rome. The Roman Senate was very leery of Caesar, told him to lay down his military command, but he did not. He crossed the Rubicon River with his army, challenging the authority of the Senate. There was a civil war, which was won by Caesar, though he was outnumbered. He was merciful to his opponents. He wanted them to become his allies, and that may have been his biggest mistake, because it was a group of those men he spared who began to conspire against him and who killed him. He was an absolute dictator of Rome, and the Roman Republic that the Senate represented never returned. Rome was ruled by a series of emperors for the rest of its existence. Here's a poem by Emily Dickinson. This is my letter to the world. This is my letter to the world that never wrote to me the simple news that nature told with tender majesty. Her message is committed to hands I cannot see. For love of her, sweet countrymen, judge tenderly of me. This is my letter to the world, poem by Emily Dickinson. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. And by Staples. Staples offers copy and print solutions for businesses, from color copies to presentations to promotional products. More at Staples Stores or staples.com. Staples, it's pro time. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Laurie Scandling, and Jeff Brown, our producer, is on the board. My next guest is Community Relations Director for Bartlett Regional Hospital, Katie Bosler. Katie, you've been in the job about a year.
Yes, it'll be 1 year August 1st.
So I have to ask you, you were a longtime communications person with the University of Alaska Southeast. You've made the switch to healthcare. Tell me what your biggest aha, or maybe a misconception you had coming into it, that has been dispelled in this last year as you've worked at Bartlett Regional.
Well, it hasn't really changed since I first started, and that is, you know, many people in the community know my husband is a nurse practitioner and a physician assistant. He works at Search, and that's what brought us to Juneau 25 years ago. Now our daughter is a registered nurse at Bartlett in the Med-Surg unit, and she's actually studying at UAA to become a nurse practitioner as well. And, you know, I knew that it was an intense job to be a nurse, and it was a lot of responsibility, but it took working there for me to realize and I have even more respect for people who work in the healthcare field, because, you know, you can't have an off day. You are responsible for other people's literal lives. And I can't say enough about my colleagues at Bartlett. I just have a lot of admiration for them, and they truly are caring people, and they're good people, and I really appreciate working with them.
It takes a lot of people to run a hospital, and it's not just those nurses who we see. It's folks who are cleaning the surfaces and registering you and making the food and assuring that the lights stay on and that the place is secure. Do you know about how many employees Bartlett has?
There's about 500.
It's a significant employer.
Yes, it is, definitely. And one of the things that we're starting an initiative to get to know those employees, all employees even better, modeled on something that
the CBJ has started called People of BRH, hashtag People of BRH. So we have our first installment this week on the Bartlett Regional Hospital Facebook page, where I was noticing how beautiful the landscaping is, especially in the summertime around the Bartlett campus. I thought, who is responsible for this? Well, it turns out it's a gentleman named Sean Nolan, who was at Glacier Gardens for 18 years before he came to Bartlett just in the last year. And he's just doing a fantastic job. So, you know, I just sort of followed him around for a while, and he told me all about, you know, watering the baskets and taking this plant out here and how you take care of that. And here's the trellis for this one. And we just had a really nice chat. And so I was able to, like, take a quote from him, put it with his picture, and put it on the Bartlett page.
Would you say the Facebook page is where most people nowadays first look for information about Bartlett?
Not necessarily. I mean, I think that the website, bartletthospital.org, is still the place to go. Facebook is just, you know, more and more a mechanism for information. And there's people who do Facebook and people who don't. So as an information person yourself, you know that it's just sort of diversifying now. You got to do it all.
Well, we're looking at the publication that is produced by Bartlett, high-quality publication that comes out on a regular basis called
Old School.
House Calls. Yeah, it's paper. I read it when it comes in.
Yeah.
You know, it's tourist season, and you have a picture of a cruise ship on the front. What are the special challenges that arrive with tourists in Juneau?
Well, this is another thing, and this summer I should get our emergency room manager in here, Kim, to talk a little bit more about it. But that's the other aha thing, is we all know that, you know, people come on the cruise ships, that some people are elderly, some people are ill when they arrive. And we have a huddle every morning where we kind of, you know, people report real quick what's going on with them, and the emergency room is always, you know, we've got five ships in, and it's going to be a big day. So a lot of people get off the ships and go right to Bartlett.
Well, 1.1 million people in a five-month period, averaging, what, 10,000 or 15,000
a
day.
Yeah. But the thing that's nice, too, is we get letters. I mean, speaking of old school, we get letters from people who are on ships writing to us saying how well taken care of they felt at Bartlett, and they're so glad that they were here when they were feeling this way, and it's really heartening.
Are there other things that arrive with tourists? And I'm thinking of infection. There have been news stories several times in the past few years about the norovirus that can get spread so quickly on a ship carrying 2,000 to 3,000 people. Every hand railing that is touched, of course, a virus can live for quite some time on it. How does Bartlett deal with the spreading of infection? It is always a challenge for a hospital in particular.
Right. And in a couple of weeks, we're going to have our infection preventionist in here, Charlie Gribben. She was supposed to come with me today, but unfortunately, ironically, she has a cold, and so she doesn't want to spread infection.
Yes. But I heard Jeff tell her, stay home.
Yeah. But if you look at this summer House Calls edition, we do have a feature on Charlie and our infection prevention wing. So she's another who knew, infection preventionist. So her job is to contain spreadable viruses, flu, within the hospital and by extension in the community. So really, with norovirus, it's just clean, clean, clean.
As with most viruses, I would guess.
But norovirus is particularly
virulent.
Yes. And another thing you'll find if you read this article is I did interview the spokesperson for the school district. Well, we call it stomach flu around here, but it could well be norovirus that's in the community through the year. I've learned so many things this year. And so that's why the school district has, you know, all hands on deck with the janitorial service to clean whenever a big group of people in a classroom are sick. So the main way to prevent illness, whether it's flu or norovirus, is wash your hands.
Wash your hands and wash them thoroughly. I saw a picture of hand washing, and it emphasized the top of your hands, not just rubbing the palms together, the top of your hand, and where the thumb connects to the palm as well, and then kind of scrunching the nails back and forth. It's got to be all around that surface.
Yep.
But it's interesting that such a pretty simple procedure can prevent most passing on of these viruses.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's another thing. I'm a lot more vigilant about that now, too. So, and you want to, it's kind of like, you know, with the electric toothbrush, it lasts 2 minutes. It's the same kind of thing with hand washing. You want to sing happy birthday to yourself twice while you're washing your hands thoroughly. And we have a hand washing how-to in the magazine as well. And we have a feature on our emergency department where they talk about the cruise ships and how that affects them seasonally.
How else does Bartlett tackle cleanliness in such a large and varied environment?
Well,
Is it just bleach on a rag, or there must be,
you know, I think
routine.
That the person who could tell you more about that would be Charlie, our infection preventionist, and I think the week of July 24th, we're going to have her here on Juno Afternoon.
I was just at Bartlett, and every wall is plastered with a sign that says, don't be afraid to ask me to wash my hands.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget to wash your hands here. Wash your hands here.
Yes.
Don't leave the room without washing your hands.
Yeah.
Please wash your hands. So the visual effect of the posters everywhere certainly convey a message of an expectation that employees and those who are visiting indeed should be washing their hands all the time.
You got it. Yeah.
What is a particular challenge for we're still a small town. What's a particular challenge for a small town hospital? What remain those things that Bartlett, although it serves the region, draws on resources in a fairly small community? What challenges is Bartlett facing?
Well, I think the kind of main challenge is a perception that I need to go down south for this procedure. And yes, there are things like, for example, we don't have a full-time dermatologist in town, so you might well have to go down south for a dermatologist. But we have a lot of really talented, very caring healthcare providers, physicians right here in Juneau. And that's another thing that time and again, we have people unsolicited just telling us how impressed they were with the care that they received at Bartlett. For example, a former colleague of mine at UAS, she and her husband had their first baby a few months ago. She called me and says, we had such a great experience at Bartlett Beginnings. I want to tell you about it. And so we had them to the hospital. We made a wonderful little video with Roger and Margot Mason and their little boy, Roger. He's not even Roger Jr., Roger the Fourth or something. Coast Guard family, they've moved on. But they ended the video saying, really, you should have this place be a destination place to have babies. That's how good it was.
Well,
they want to come back.
The terrific care we had during kind of an emergency pregnancy situation when our twins were born.
Mm.
And this was over 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the care was so professional and so tremendous. Honestly, we made lifelong friends with those OB nurses.
Oh, my gosh.
And for our children's 18th birthday, we invited them to the party.
Oh, my gosh.
They really were a wonderful, wonderful team, and it was a complicated situation. So I'm not surprised to hear that there are those who would call it a destination, a birthing place.
Yeah.
And the follow-up cares, as I mentioned to you the other day, it was so good I was worried it might be addictive. Like, I might just want to go back. Wow, those scones were delicious, and everybody was so nice.
Well, oh, my gosh. So it's been that way for quite a while. Yeah.
Now, are you inviting people to share their stories?
We are, as a matter of fact. Another thing that we've started on the Facebook page is Feedback Friday. So if you go to our Facebook page now, Bartlett Regional Hospital, you'll see Heather Lendy's face there, our well-known author from Haines, who I just ran into her the other day at Bartlett, and she was down with a elderly neighbor who had fallen and hurt herself. And she just went on and on about how great it was. And her neighbor is one of those people who she's 85 and had hardly been to a hospital in her life. And she said, wow, it's not – I kind of like it here. The food's not so bad either.
We're talking with Katie Bosler. She is the Community Relations Director for Bartlett Regional Hospital. Check out their webpage, which is bartletthospital.org. Is that correct?
And also...
And the Facebook page.
Yes. And if you want to tell your Bartlett story, I would love to hear it. And, you know, we have multimedia, so if you're not comfortable with radio or TV, it can be print or whatever. So I can be contacted at kbosler, K K-B-A-U-S as in Sam, L-E-R, number 3, at bartletthospital.org.
All right.
Or you can just go to the website and you can find me there.
Find you. All right. Yeah. Thanks for joining us, Katie.
Thank you, Lori.
This is Bird Note. Strolling at sunset along the ocean beach at California's Morro Bay, you hear a soft, whistled call from the beach grass nearby. A male snowy plover announces his presence. At Milford Point in Connecticut, you might hear a piping plover. Although no bird is visible, you notice official signs planted in the sand asking you to stay out of the dunes to protect plovers and their nests. Suddenly, a pale 6-inch plover runs across the evening sand like a high-speed wind-up toy. Just as quickly, the bird disappears, concealed by its camouflage. Plovers are specifically adapted to lay their eggs in shallow scrapes in the sand, lined with bits of shell, pebbles, and grass. This unfortunate nesting niche means the birds are highly vulnerable to disturbances by people, dogs, cars, and impinging development. Plovers are threatened in much of their coastal ranges, so enjoy watching the plovers from your side of the signs. Even a slight intrusion can lead the birds to abandon their nests. Conservation efforts are afoot on both the Atlantic and Pacific coasts to protect these plovers. Find out more on our website, birdnote.org.
This is Stacia Harris from the Year of Kindness Steering Committee. As part of 17YOK, all sorts of groups are adopting specific weeks during which they do something to help spread kindness. This week's group is the Glory Hole. You can sign up for a week by emailing 17YOK at junopolice.com. Together we can make Juno a better place to live.
And welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Lori Scandling. My next guests are Allison Gillum. She's from the Southeast Alaska Land Trust, and she is here with the artist in residence, Crystal Cudworth from The Canvas. And we're going to be talking about a plein air painting session at the Jensen Olson Arboretum. There will be two sessions this Saturday, 10 to noon and 1 to 3, for $40 per person. So I want to ask the artist, Crystal, first. Crystal, what is plein air painting for those who might not know what that type of art is?
Plein air painting is painting outside. So typically artists have an easel to stand up and work. And so you set up with a palette, easel, and your eyes. And you can use any kind of tool. Traditionally, it's brushes. Palette knives work well. And you limit your mediums, and you use your eyes and senses and experience the outdoor world.
I happened to coincidentally be at the Arboretum last year, just walking around, and there were all these people quietly taking in what there was to observe. And one woman I knew said, "I've never done this before, and it's just so peaceful and wonderful." And she was having a really wonderful experience. Let me ask, what if it's really raining?
That's a great question. Although we just checked the weather, and it looked like a full sunny day on Saturday, so we're hoping, I should knock on wood here. But we have had rain in the past. The first year we've done it, this is our third year doing this, partnering with the Canvas, and the first year we did it, it rained quite a bit, and we had tents set up, and it actually was really fun. Everyone was kind of huddled under the tents, but would dart out to look at flowers and come back and paint. And the first 2 years we did it, it was watercolors, and this year we're doing oil paints, so it's a little different this year.
Whose idea was this, Allison, to use an artistic opportunity to raise funds for Southeast Alaska Land Trust?
Yeah, it's another great question. We at the Land Trust have been really focusing on figuring out ways to connect people with our conservation land and with land in general. And so we've been trying to think of creative ways to get kind of outside of our normal reach of people and kind of pull in some other people who may have different interests but still find out or realize how connected they are to the land and also to learn about this conservation land that's available for recreation and different types of activities like painting outside.
What are some of the easily identifiable portions of land that the Southeast Alaska Land Trust has purchased and therefore preserved that our public might recognize?
Yeah, so obviously the Arboretum is one. That was the first property we ever protected back in 1998. And then another really good one is the Boy Scout Trail. Not all of it, but part of it, the access to that trail is protected by us with the city. We have a big project that's happening, land abutting the refuge right here in the heart of Juneau. It's a project we've been working on, so people may not know it, but when they look out there, they're seeing land that we own and protect out in the refuge, or abutting the refuge. Those are, I'd say, the most well-known ones. We are throughout Southeast Alaska, so we have land in a lot of other places.
And the approach is to purchase the property in order to protect it.
That is one way to protect land, is to own and manage it. Another way is to have other landowners, like the city and borough of Juneau as an example, or a private landowner, and then we hold what's called a conservation easement, which is a legal document that restricts basically the development of the land. So it ensures that the property will remain open and natural forever, and we're in charge of making sure that that document is upheld. So that's just another way.
So this is a fundraiser. It would seem like a parcel of land might be pretty expensive. How else do you secure funds for the purchase of the properties?
So fundraising is definitely a part of it. Grants are another way that we get funding. And then another source of money, which is not as sexy as some of these other things, but we are part of the Army Corps of Engineers wetland mitigation program. And so we get funds through that program for land conservation. So if people are impacting wetlands in one area, they may be required by the Army Corps to offset those impacts. And one option for them is basically paying us a fee to take on that obligation to offset the impacts to those wetlands by protecting wetlands in a different area. So a lot of money comes through that program.
Crystal, what kind of talent should someone bring with them for this opportunity on Saturday out at the Jensen Olsen Arboretum, which we should mention is at about 25 miles. It's 1 mile past the shrine sign on the same side of the road. And for folks who have never been to the Arboretum, it's a former homestead on a little indent called Pearl Harbor, and it's quite pretty. So does someone need to have some experience or tools that they need to bring with them, Crystal?
People of all skills are welcome to join, and I don't think you necessarily need to bring art skill to the table. Open ears, open eyes, and a willingness to try new techniques and observation and get messy with the paint, get physical. We'll be layering the paint, so carving with it in the beginning, doing a traditional grisaille layer of laying down more or less a drawing, and a willingness to move your content around. And yeah.
Are the slots limited, and how many are available?
Yeah, so each class, there's 12 spots available. We still, there's still some spots left, so definitely if you're interested, just go to our website, www.southeastalaskalandtrust.org, and you can register there. But all the art supplies are going to be included, so you don't have to physically bring anything.
And the cost is $40, and again, there are two sessions to choose from, 10 o'clock to noon, and 1 o'clock to 3 p.m. What type of, I guess, other fundraising? You mentioned we want to shine a light or bring a focus on some of these lands that are so precious and that folks may desire an opportunity to appreciate a little bit more. Do you have other fundraisers associated with some of the properties, and what might they be?
Yeah, we do. So another one that's coming up at the end of August is we do a fly casting workshop. We partner with the local chapter of Trout Unlimited, And Kevin Meyer, who's a local guide, volunteers his time, and we take about 10 people out to a property we own on North Douglas, which was a teeny little parcel that we purchased specifically for access to the Gastineau Channel and the refuge for fishing, hunting, whatever, you know, recreational access people might need in that area. North Douglas Highway is very much privately owned, so public access along there is limited, so that was the purpose of that project. So end of August, we go out and go on the hunt for cohos, so we get people connected to the access and the refuge there. And then we had a fundraiser back in June, a Wild for Conservation 5K, which is a 5K out at the Airport Dyke Trail, which looks out onto our conservation land that borders the refuge. So all of the events we try to do, we really think about, okay, where where are properties that we think people probably don't know about that are our lands that we've protected, and try to educate them and let them have a good time outside.
We're talking with Allison Gillum. She is with the Southeast Alaska Land Trust, and at their website, you can sign up for the plein air painting opportunities. There are two on Saturday, $40 per person, and you don't need to bring anything but your interest in nature. Thanks to you, and thanks to Crystal Cudworth, who is with the Canvas. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Democracy Now! Is a national, daily, independent, award-winning news program hosted by Amy Goodman. Pioneering the largest public media collaboration in the U.S., Democracy Now! Provides access to people and perspectives rarely heard, including independent and international journalists and ordinary people from around the world who are directly affected by U.S. foreign policy. You can hear Democracy Now! Weeknights at 9 on KTOO News Juneau.
I'm Jesse Ford. Bullseye is about finding the good stuff in popular culture, the kind of stuff that might change your life.
Kind of giving me the chills hearing it right now.
You know, I'd never heard anything like it before. It'd be like seeing a new color.
It felt transcendent.
It's Bullseye with me, Jesse Thorne, from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Tune in Saturdays at 2 p.m.
Thanks for staying with us on a Juneau afternoon. In our last segment today, we are with Rachel Bird and a musician who said, "I could call him Russell if I was mad at him, or otherwise it's Ukulele Russ," and he has a ukulele with him. Rachel, what's your business? You talked about starting some promotions here in Juneau with Birdcage Productions. Tell us about that.
Yes, that's true. We started a couple of months ago. The idea behind that is to bring artists from not only down south but all over, so that we were able to basically showcase them and provide a networking opportunity for the local artists that we have and showcase the local artists as well.
And Russ is one of those opportunities for Juneau?
Ukulele Russ is one of those opportunities. That is correct.
You can call it that.
Can I call you Mr. Ukulele or Mr. Russ? What is
either or.
Okay.
That's fine, yeah.
So, Russ, tell us a little bit about your background, and then I want to hear that uke as well.
Well, I've been living in Fairbanks for about a decade now, and I've been touring internationally for about 5 years. So I go over and I headline festivals in Australia and New Zealand, and I play stuff down south in the 48, you know, down there. And I've been making a living a go at this since 2005. And
that says a lot.
I haven't looked back since. I pinch myself every day. I'm like, that's real.
And, of course, with Jake Shimabukuro, and
yeah,
others who have brought attention to this very versatile instrument, I would guess that more and more people are want to check it out.
Yeah, it's really kind of blowing up now. But the ukulele has this cycle of about 30, 40 years where it's super popular, and then somebody creeps everybody out, and then it totally crashes. Like, thanks, Tiny Tim. Thanks.
Russ, where will you be playing in Juneau? Where can folks catch your act?
I'm doing a private gig tonight in Douglas, but tomorrow I'll be teaching a class in the afternoon at the Rockwell.
That's right.
If anybody's interested in learning some alternative ukulele skills, if you're a ukulele player, or you just like music, you can come.
There is a uke group that meets every single, I think it's Sunday, at 11 at TK McGuire's. So I would guess there's a
hopefully they're listening.
A pretty...
The Juno Jambusters know about it. Yeah, we've
exactly,
been in contact with
pretty,
them for sure.
Exactly. Pretty interested segment about ukuleles. What time and how much are the lessons? And you said they're at Rockwell.
Yeah, so the ukulele workshop at Rockwell is 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. That includes one glass of beer or wine. With that, and instructional comedy as well as teaching the ukulele.
And bring your own instrument, or will there be
instruments?
Yeah,
please bring your own. If I could travel, fly around, and take boats around with 20 ukuleles, I would, but...
Is there so kind of a dumb question? Is there a huge variety of ukuleles? You said if I could travel with a bunch of them, is there a bass ukulele or a...
Well, yeah, I have actually a bass ukulele that, see, with my act and I play shows, I run a one-man band, so I have these giant machines called giant machines. Pedals called loopers, where I can record myself on the spot.
Sure.
And then it plays over in time. Well, I have a bass ukulele. It's a solid body electric, clamped with DeWalt construction clamps to a mic stand next to me. I built my house with those clamps, by the way. It's real Alaskan. You know, you got to work with what you got. But I clamp it on there so I can reach over, not without having to waste time picking it up and putting it down. Play a bass line, tap my foot, it'll play the bass line over and over again, and then I can...
You got a band.
I got a band. Yeah,
now,
there's
how long
a baritone and a tenor and a concert and a soprano size.
How long will you be in Juneau, and do you have some public performances as well?
Yes, I do. After the Rockwell class, I'm going to be playing at the Rendezvous, so tomorrow night.
Okay.
That's right. This event with Ukulele Russ is sort of a combination effort from the Rendezvous and also Birdcage Promotions.
Okay, so the lessons are from 6 to 8 p.m. at Rockwell, and then your show starts at 9 at the Rendezvous.
Yeah, with my one-man frontier band.
And that is a free event at the Rendezvous.
Yeah.
Rendezvous 9 and free. Want to do some samples for us and whet our appetite?
Yeah, I'll play a little ukulele for you. I cracked my knuckles there. I come from Square Banks. And Square Banks is not the best place to live. However, if you like Square Banks, it ruins you to live anywhere else. I have to say that's true. This is a city by the river where the banks is fair. Finale.
We are talking with Ukulele Russ, and he will be offering ukulele workshop tomorrow from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Rockwell downtown, followed by a free show at the Rendezvous at 9 o'clock, and that's all tomorrow. Thank you
for
sharing
us.
Your talent with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us on a Juno afternoon. Tomorrow, Andy Klein will be here with details about the upcoming homebrew competition. We'll learn about Saturday's sensory-sensitive showing of Despicable Me 3, and Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. Thank you for joining us. I'm Laurie Scandling.